This is wildlife with my mom. I mean, I'm German. Okay, no. This is wildlife with my mom.
Yes, awesome.
It's working. So very nice. Very, very welcome, Leonardo Wild. I just saw that your last name and my podcast, it's wild, haha, pun, but I didn't name it after your family. It was something else. I don't even know where that came from, but I think it's funny. So very welcome, Leonardo Wild. How do I pronounce it correctly in your... Because when I talk about your family or the knowledge and the huge universe your family created there, the Germans obviously say Leonardo Wild, but I hear in interviews they say Leonardo Wild as well, or
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's Wild if you're in with German speaking people, Wild if you're with English speaking people, and maybe Wild if you speak Spanish, or Salvaje, basically. I don't know which one.
Yes, Salvaje, that would be so nice.
Yes, thank you, Alexandra, for having me here on the podcast, and I hope we all enjoy it.
I'm pretty sure. I think this is the podcast episode I prepared myself the longest time for without even knowing, because I think I've been following the work of your parents for at least 15 years. And it got really intense when my kid was in kindergarten. He went to a democratic kindergarten, and his favorite kindergarten teacher, she was always like, you have to read her books. This, you will love it. And she was right. This changed my whole life because it finally gave me to live how I feel like I wanted to live with my child. It is crazy. So I'm super happy that you're here. And I would never have, I don't know, I never had the idea to invite you until my friend from kindergarten said, you know what? You're so stupid. You have this podcast and you don't invite him. That is just insane. So you are here. And I think everyone who's into unschooling knows that you are the kid of Rebecca and Mauricio Wild. And originally, I think, you guys come from Germany or Austria, and your parents, is that right? Germany or Austria?
Well, my mother was German.
Yeah, and
she
your father was from
Berlin.
Austria.
He was raised in München, Munich. My father actually was born in Quito, Ecuador, but his parents were Swiss.
That
immigrated to Ecuador in 1936. So my father was born here, but we always have the Swiss ties, you know, from with my cousins and Switzerland, my family there. But we basically I was raised here in Ecuador mostly.
Nice. So I think everyone who is familiar with unschooling or homeschooling or alternative education knows what like the monument your parents built over there. And I really think that is a solid education. And I really need to say you're not boring either. I don't even know where to start. I mean, you've been all over the world. You did everything from, I don't know, skipping through a hurricane to crossing the Andes. I mean, you are basically your last name. You're living up to this. And what I really like is that you have so many talents that I don't even know what to say. So maybe you introduce yourself with the things you think that are important or that you want people to know.
Well, basically, I am somebody who has, how can I say it, who has done life in a out of the box kind of way. You know, when I was when I was 11, 12, my parents started the Pistolozzi, right? Or the Pistolozzi kindergarten. But then as they saw that the system that wasn't just a kindergarten issue, it was more like a broader educational situation, right? They realized that when I was in school, I was in a normal school, not in the Pistolozzi school. They opened it up for my brother, Rafael. So they told me, if you don't want to go to, if you don't want to go to school anymore, you don't have to. Which at the age of 12, you know, that's illegal. I know, in other places, maybe not, but in Ecuador, you have to be in school at least until you're 15. But after like 3 weeks of being in the, you know, thinking about it, I said, yeah, no, I don't want to continue in school. And so I left school in the middle of the year. I was in a German school at the time, and spent about a year and a half out of school, right? There was a lot of bullying going on at the German school. It was a very strict system. And so it wasn't the best of environments, even when you consider schooling as a way of indoctrinating children, because that's really what's happening worldwide with the formal educational system, right? So I left school when I was 12, but then the world is actually empty of children because everybody is in school. So yes. I didn't have many friends, and I started missing the social aspect of being with other children. And then my cousins, with whom I grew up in a farm in the north of Ecuador in Tabacundo, they moved to Quito and they entered the Swiss Ecuadorian school. And then I said, well, I want to go back to school, which was a whole ordeal because I had been out. I had to have a reason to have been out of school. So I had to sort of come up with some illness that wasn't visible that I had in order to not have a legal issue.
Yeah.
Right. So you can see that that's the extent of how the legal system is bound to the concept of being educated or being schooled. But I managed to return to school for 2 years, and then I decided, no, this is not really for me. And so when I was 15, I left school again. And back then I started writing. So I've been since the age of 12, since I left school the first time, I started writing. And I've written ever since. So I'm actually mostly a writer that writes fiction, nonfiction, and screenplays. But as a writer, you are somebody who it's hard to make a living off of writing. So I did a lot of other things too. That's why probably it's hard to pin me down.
Yes. So what would you say was the greatest adventure you ever went on? What was the best thing?
Well, if you take the words of Louis L'Amour, which is an American Wild West writer and novelist, adventure is the romantic word for trouble, right? So when you are in the adventure, you're not in an adventure, you're having troubles, right? So when you look at it, yeah, looking backwards, it's an adventure. So I have done many different adventures like that. You know, I've from big ones like going through a hurricane 8 days, sailing through it, not voluntarily, it happened, crossing the Andes on foot. We also, with the Pestalozzi school, did a bike trip with the children of the Pestalozzi. We were 49 people all together, 8 adults, 39 children between 13 and 20. We went from Quito, Ecuador to Manaus, Brazil, going through Colombia, Venezuela on a cycling trip that lasted like 5 months. No, 4 months, 5,000 kilometers. That's another adventure, you know. So there's many, crazy. Many, many different adventures. Now, one of the adventures I'm in is basically trying to see how to make a living in a way that is different, you know, because it's not easy in today's world financially, etc., right? And there are all these rules, all these blueprints that we have in society about what is money, and what is money is not something that's good. So if you have a lot of money, you're not good. All those kind of bullshit rules, as they call it. So learning about all of that, always learning.
That is so nice. And I just learned that you are now the chairman for the Fundación Educativa Pestalozzi. So what is happening over there? Because I thought for the last 5 or 10 years, I thought the school project doesn't go on. Alfredo, por favor. And now I think, because I recently had like a sit down with some families, like homeschooling, unschooling families here in Europe. And we all agreed that unschooling is impossible in the legal way anyway, but homeschooling, even if it's like within the legal framework, is now really hard to do without having some kind of pressure. I mean, you can argue, yeah, you're on the right side of the law and maybe it's a gray zone or something like that. But Alfredo, por favor. But even in Ireland, people tell me that homeschooling is getting so ridiculously hard to pull through in Europe. So a lot of families are actually thinking about leaving Europe, me included. And I was thinking, okay, where do we go, everyone? Alfred, is that my dog or your dog? At this point, I don't even know. Shh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my mother passed away in 2015, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Pestalozzi school as a school closed in 2005.
Yeah.
The foundation continues as a foundation. And when they closed the Pestalozzi school, which was official, formal, not formal, official school accepted by the government as a school, they closed it. And then they opened the project called the CEPAS, Centros para Actividad Autónomas, is Centers for Autonomous Activities in Spanish. Where my children went to. I have three children. And so it's not, it wasn't a school anymore as such, but it was more like a project where parents are in the environments rather than teachers. And it was a whole different concept, using the same environment ideas of prepared environments, relaxed environments, non-directive education, and those kind of premises, correct? So, but then my father, my mother passed away in 2015. My father, who hadn't been much involved in the educational aspect for quite a few years, he had been doing more other things with alternative economy and monetary systems. They basically talked with the ex-Pesta parents, I mean, ex-Pesta students who were now parents and had their own children, and they decided to open up the Pesta 2, as they call it, with those ex-Pesta students who had their own children, wanted to do something. The same question, where do we put our children, right? Yeah. That lasted for about a year or so. There were some issues going on there as well. It's not easy, right, to do something like that. And so that closed as well. But the foundation continues as an educational foundation. And my father passed away in 2020, just 15 days into the pandemic. He had a stroke, high pressure, was suffering from high pressure, high blood pressure. And so that they, that happened. And then everything was in lockdown, right, for many, many months. Then my children here, Sebastian and Miranda, my elder children, they say, well, what are we going to do with the foundation? You know, they had been out of the Pesta for a while, and but they basically were raised in that system. And for them, it was like, what do we do with that? We had materials as well that were our family materials, like 4,000, 5,000 materials that were at the foundation. So we decided to go on and connect with the people who had been members of the foundation. The last ones were living at the project called El León Dormido. And but it was a bit of a difficult situation because some people there, they started sort of taking, believing that they are the foundation and that it's in their hands to continue with it, even though they didn't, some of them didn't really have that much of an idea, the people who were trying to do that. So we had some issues there with some of these people, and it took us over 3 years of talking and having meetings until finally they accepted that we should participate more in it. We tried to become members of the foundation again. They actually tried to stop us from being members of the foundation. You know, they weren't accepting us, which was ridiculous. But finally that happened. We became members. We kept on talking about it with them, having meetings, and about a year and a bit more, January from last year, 2024, there was a situation, a breaking point where they, or February actually, where the president or a chairman resigned for health issues and other situations. And then they asked us if we wanted to be more hands-on with that. And we accepted, and they chose me as a chairman. So I have been chairman of that since then, but it's been sort of slow because there are very few members really, and most of them live in the housing project up there. And because of the pandemic and everything else, everything sort of stopped, right?
Yeah.
All the projects. So we have been trying to recuperate that. Now there's a building called the Dome, El Domo, which is a cultural center and acoustic halls for theater, music, and meetings, and we refurbished that. And now, since 3-4 months ago, or beginning of this year, there's a commission that is in charge of making the Dome active again as a place for different activities, not just of the foundation, but for people who want to give theater workshops or conversations. So we're reactivating that. Since there is no educational project per se at the foundation, so it's a lot going on, but it's slow, in a way.
Yeah,
and also to see what is the foundation going to do as a foundation? What's the vision of it? What's the mission of it? Considering that now there is no actual school, but there's a lot of knowledge behind all the work my parents did in terms of educational methodologies and the scientific neurological foundations of learning, which is non-directive.
I really like that, because I think you're the perfect example of you mastered so many skills that people don't learn in school. So this is like the perfect example of this is working. People can trust in this because you see it. And you know what I found really interesting? That most of the people I talked to who were unschooled, homeschooled, or like any other alternative educational form in their childhood, I never met someone who was like, no, my kid will go to school. I always met these beautiful human beings and they were all like, yeah, it doesn't stop with me. My kids won't go to school, or they are even, the kids are now grown and third generation is not going to regular school and these kind of things. I think it's really, really beautiful. So I don't know. I mean, you have three kids and they are all grown, I would say. What would you do if you had like little kids now that need like social structure and all of these things? How would you organize it? Because what I see, and this is the same that you experienced since the lockdowns, especially these private organized groups in unschooling, homeschooling, it really lost pace somehow. What would you do if you would be a new parent to little kids now?
Well, it is a difficult situation in the world today.
When
the pestalozzi started the first time in 1977, the constitution of Ecuador allowed parents to choose education that they wanted to have. Maybe the Ministry of Education didn't approve school as an official school, but they could not shut it down because of the constitution. So there was that, that loophole in the legal system here where that was allowed. On the other hand, then in 1984, with the foundation and it becoming more of a of an entity, not just my parents in charge of it, there were some parents who had links with the educational ministry in Ecuador, and they basically managed to help create what they call the experimental school law that allowed a school which did not follow the curriculum or the methodology of the Ministry of Education to be an accepted, officially accepted school in the system. So that happened. But then those things started to change in the late 1990s, early 2000s, as the government changed and they started to sort of break that agreement on their side. And that's one of the reasons why the Pestalozzi closed down, because it was more and more these legal pressures to comply with certain requirements that the ministry was putting in place. There was also a financial issue. The world's economy was, or Ecuador's economy had just gone through a major crisis with the change in the sucre for the dollar. Parents had less money. They had to work more, less time for their children. So it was a whole combination of aspects that made my parents decide to close the school. Plus, they had started a Pestalozzi for my younger brother, Rafael, who was already out of school for many years. So instead of fighting against all of that, they just closed the school. And then they opened the CEPAS that I mentioned, right? Which was just a project, like a space for children, right? Without any formal Ministry of Education permits. But I understand that in Germany and other places in the world, there is the state can actually take children away from parents who don't send them to what the state calls an official educational system, or goes through the motions of following. Like if you do homeschooling, that you do have to have children take certain tests to see if they're leveled with whatever educational curriculum they think should be the one that children have to have. So I think that nowadays is more and more difficult to say, I'm going to go somewhere where I'm free to choose education that I want to, you know.
True.
I don't know how it is in the States. I think in the States there are like academies, educational projects where parents can do that. homeschooling is more or less accepted. It is not in all of the U.S. It's certain states because of the different laws that they have there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So you can have, like, for example, there is an academy called the West River Academy where you can follow. And that's how Sebastian and Andrew, my two youngest children, they actually did a report on what they had done in their life, and they managed to go and get their high school diploma using that. You know, but that's like more how to get the diploma, not how to spend the years in a place that is not allowing you to be, how can I say it, free to choose what you want to learn, right?
Yeah.
So politically, I think it's, and legally, it's more and more difficult to go somewhere and say, yes, I'm going to do this, you know?
True. Give me 1 second. I need to call my son because the dog is going crazy. I don't know what his issue is. Paul, kommst du mal bitte den Alfred abholen? Der Alfred hat mentale Schwierigkeiten. Ich glaube, der möchte zu dir. Dankeschön.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know what is wrong with this dog. Yeah, I think I almost ended up in jail in Germany because I didn't want my child to go to school. And it wasn't even a critical situation. He was six and we had one more year. And they still, I don't know, somehow sensed that I wouldn't comply with what they were doing. So we left Germany within, I don't know, 4 days or something like that. And we never went back. I mean, vacation-wise, to visit family and stuff. But I really feel that this knot is like tighter and tighter every year, and it's making things really hard. But the West River Academy thing, that is really helpful because it basically covers the legal aspect. I need to say that I just found out, if you're already in a country and you're registered or anything like that, that the officials know that you are there already, and then you start West River Academy, it doesn't help you. You already have to be enrolled, then enter the country, and then it's okay. But for example, in Portugal, not anymore. It's so crazy. It's changing so fast. It's almost impossible to plan ahead, like where are you going to be next year? So I know a lot of families are doing world schooling to run away from this legal issues, partially, and of course, for some adventure time. And I really think it's crazy that so many people that want just freedom for their kids are fighting this fight. And I really don't want to fight it anymore. It's I'm out. I mean, my son is 12. I almost did it. So it's not so much time left to keep fighting. But it's really, really crazy because what I think is happening is in school, like regular school, is so disrespectful. I don't have any other word, but the disrespect like adults are showing on a daily basis, it's impossible because we tried school here, I think, for a couple of days in Spain because I really wanted to fit in and I wanted to try everything possible. And it was lockdown as well. And I was like, okay, we cannot flee from here, so we have to deal with the situation. And the disrespect, it was something else for me. I couldn't handle it. And my son as well, he was out before he was in. So I really think we need to change that.
Yeah. I mean, there is different aspects to this. One of them is the legal aspect, as you say, you know, the legal aspect of, one, when your children are a certain age, that the state tells you that you have to send your child to an institution that is accepted or follow a curriculum, depending on the country, that is accepted by the state as being educated, because there's a whole thing of the right to have an education, and they tell you what education is, right? That's one thing. The other thing is, once you have gone through or not gone through an educational system that's formal, in other words, like you don't have a degree, you don't have a title, then you can have those institutions that help you get formalize what you learned with a title that is equivalent to high school or something like that. That's one aspect of it, right? It's a legal, judicial aspect. But there is another aspect to the whole issue of education, which is, okay, there is a formal education, which is mostly similar in most nations. Basically, it's similar environment where you have chairs, tables where children sit in front of, and a teacher imparting knowledge, whatever you want to call it, and different variations of that, with a curriculum where basically you're supposed to learn, we all know that, reading, writing, mathematics, whatever, you know. However, the whole issue is when people say, I'm not going to send them to the institution to learn that, but what are you going to do? Because we have to be, we don't have to be, but if we don't get an education, doesn't have to be formal, human beings have to grow and learn something. And then that's where the whole issue comes of alternative education, which is a very broad term that doesn't really tell you anything except that it's not part of the formal system. But some of the alternative methodologies can even be worse than a normal formal educational system, because they have no structure, or they actually don't understand what learning is. Or you have also the whole issue of homeschooling. Homeschooling doesn't necessarily mean that you are respecting your child's needs. It basically means you're not sending a child to an institution, but maybe you're following the same curriculum as what the state school tells you. So it's basically a social thing. You're not participating socially in a formal education, but from the content, from the curriculum, some parents simply just impart the same kind of knowledge, or even more sometimes, in maybe even in a disrespectful way. As parents, they are now also teachers, you know. So it doesn't mean anything unless you go deeper into it. When you say homeschooling or non-schooling or alternative education, the question is, what are you really doing? Right? Besides the whole legal aspect of having to do this, you know, spending time in an institution, according to some governments. And this is what I find, that there's a lot of confusion there. When they say, yeah, my children are in alternative school, but what are they doing in the school? What are the premises of it? And this is where I think a lot of the discussion is not going to, you know, it is more going to what is in the curriculum, or I'm not going to send them to a school. But there is no bigger discussion of what is actually learning, the process of learning. What do we need as children? And this is more or less what my parents started working on discovering as they continued working in the Pestalozzi way. I mean, this is way many years ago, that we need, as human beings or organisms, we need environments that are help us become what we in nature genetically can become, right? So we have an environment for younger children which is different than the ones for older children, because the needs are different. The stages of development, according to Jean Piaget, which can be adjusted a bit depending on the situations, but they're basically sensitive stages where we are more able or capable or driven to do certain things that allow us to fulfill a program from within on what do I need now to develop in my biology to become a human being that is more or less balanced, right? Mm-hmm. So those kind of discussions, I don't think there is much going on out there in that sense.
That's true. I like that because I think what we do at home here is soul-led education. So I really think everyone is born with a path, and school, like formal school, mostly is like bringing you to a whole different path, but not your soul path. And what I like to see is that my son has a lot of freedom, and we talk about what he needs, what his next steps are. And there are times where nothing happens and then everything happens at once. And I see like big changes every, I don't know, when he was younger, like fast paced every couple of months. Now that he's a little bit older, I really see a pattern, and I really see that he is doing things by himself. He doesn't really think about what he's learning or these kind of things. He's just doing what he feels like he needs for his next step, and it comes from inside. It's like intrinsic motivation, and it's not something that I'm putting upon him from outside. For me, it was always like a little bit important to know that he's capable of reading and basic mathematics and these kind of things. But I thought this he will figure out one day. And I was really well prepared by this democratic kindergarten he went to, because they really showed me from Jean Piaget to all these beautiful things, Montessori, how we actually treat kids and how they unfold what is inside of them. Just because you treat them right, give them a place to be and to feel safe, loved, and cared for. I think this is incredible. It's like flowers. And I think a lot of people are mistaking kids for stupid assholes and not human beings. I think it's crazy how society is treating kids so different than normal human beings. It's like they have some kind of disease or disability that needs to be fixed. And I think our kids don't need to be fixed, because they bring everything they have. We just need to help them to really grow into it, maybe. And
there is a whole concept of what people call respect. And I find as a writer who writes about these subjects or other subjects that talk about things that apparently are obvious and normal, but I discovered that, for example, when we talk about the word respect, we believe we all are on the same page what respect is. But when you actually analyze it, it's not. We believe when we say the word money that we all agree on what money is. But you actually, if you start asking people what is it, they all have different answers. So we are not on the same page. There are some of these aspects of normal life, or for example, water, just the water we drink. I have a company where we actually have water that has been optimized for human consumption with bioelectronic parameters that are the ones that are healthier or more sustainable for human hydration, right? But when you look at people out there, we say water is just water. No, it is not. And this is what I find in our society, that when we believe that we are on the same page about a concept like respect or something as simple as water, we realize, or health, or even the word education, right? So when we don't actually go deeper into it, what is it actually? What does it imply? What does it mean? It's hard for us to come together as a group of human beings to agree with something. Like you say, okay, children are a pest. They are badly behaved. They're a problem. They have to be fixed. Something wrong with them. That's a lot of the concept. Or if you go become a teenager, of course, you have entered what I call in Spanish, la edad del burro, the donkey's age, you know? And stuff like that. But those are all symptoms of something going on where there is some sort of an imbalance. And it is not necessarily an imbalance from within, because life processes, I don't know if you're familiar with Umberto Maturana's concept of autopoiesis, right? Mm-hmm. Which is also vastly misunderstood, because autopoiesis is how do living systems, living organisms make themselves, right? And there is a discussion between Maturana and Varela, with whom he wrote in 1972 the book on autopoiesis, where Varela says autopoiesis is strictly for unicellular organisms, which like cells, right? Human beings are not. And then Maturana, basically what they call the epistemology of Umberto Maturana, said, well, there are living organisms which are larger. They're not necessarily biologically like that, but in the concept, the process of being, they are autopoietic as well. So I was asked some years ago by the Central University of Ecuador to write when Maturana passed away, because they knew I had met Maturana a few times and I had been talking about Maturana since the early 90s writing about it. And so they asked me to write a paper on it, but I said, wait a minute, autopoiesis, Varela is correct and Maturana is correct. They're both correct. They're not, it's not only about unicellular systems, but what else is there for larger systems like us, like human beings, right? And what happens is that we are autopoietic, means we make ourselves, but we are also allopoietic. Allopoietic is You make other things, like a factory that makes cars. Doesn't make factories, it makes cars. We, or a bird makes nests. So it is autopoietic, but it's also allopoietic. But there's a third element, which I came up to, which I called metapoiesis, which is a combination of nature, nurture, and culture, right? One of the aspects of autopoiesis or living organisms is that without the environment, we cannot exist. So an organism or a living system doesn't stop its being at the skin. It is actually a part of the environment. So the environment has certain characteristics that do not help or do not nurture the needs of the organism. The organism is going to adapt to the environment as well as it can in order to continue living or surviving. So if you put organisms called children in environments that are not necessarily a reflection of their potential, they're going to somehow try to continue surviving and living as best as they can in those limited conditions, which in most cases is like the educational, physical educational hall or classroom that is very, very poor. It's like putting a plant in a desert and expecting the plant to thrive, right? We are very resilient. We can apparently thrive, but the actual potential of our genetic makeup of our nature is not fully developed. And then we wonder why children or youngsters behave in ways that we consider that they're not good, that they have to be fixed. When my father had used to give an example, if you have a car that has problem with suspension, the shock absorbers break down every time, what we do is we take the car to the mechanic, fix it, change the shocks, change the suspension or whatever, and then put it back on the road. But what if the road is so bad that that's what's happening? And this is like a metaphor for what's happening with today's children, not just in a formal educational setting. We're talking about all that's going on now with the social media, cell phone technology, and then all the other stuff coming up, which is, yeah, it's part of the environment that children have to adapt to. Some of it has the quality of being addictive because of the way we interact with it. But basically, if we realize that the environment that we are being brought up in is what makes us who we are, or allows us to become full human beings, or as full as possible, to the best of our potential, then we can say, okay, how many hours do children spend in a formal setting and how many hours do they spend at home, right? Or how can we make the environment at home in a way that actually helps overcome some of these limitations or difficulties in the development of children when they are in a different environment, like a classroom? And this is more what the discussion has to go today. How do you prepare environments for children to become the best we can, and what kind of dangers do we have to take away from that environment that can actually make it worse, you know? So
I love that.
That's really understanding that. In one of the articles I wrote about education, I can probably send it to you in Spanish, was published by the Central University of Ecuador's yearly magazine, Annales. I basically say that formal education is the mass creation of human bonsais.
Yeah.
Right? So they're nice and formed, but the actual tree is not there. It is in a minimalist way, but they have been like they have been cut and pruned to the point that they are a nice little bonsai, it's a work of art, but they are not the full potential of what the plant could have given. So I mean, there's a lot to talk about there, but yeah, it's a lot to take in, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm on your page. I really think that the example your dad brought up, I really like that. Am I allowed to reuse it? Because it really fits. And it really, I don't know, is an answer to a lot of questions. Very simple, so people can understand. I really like that. You talked about dangers that we would possibly need to remove from our kids' life to make them like thrive or make it easier for them to grow into who they are. What do you think about AI and similar technologies? Because I was born with like a disgust for these kind of things, and I'm getting used to it more and more, I need to say, but I'm still not at a point where I am, yes, let's do everything with AI. Let's implement it in every single aspect in our lives. I think it can be very dangerous, especially if we don't really know who is behind these projects and what are they really doing with the stuff, with the data they are collecting and these kind of things. So my son, I'm very lucky. He loves technology, but he's not really into AI or something like this. Of course, he's playing with it here and there, but he has a natural, let's say, a boundary somehow. He thinks it's creepy and he is not sure if it's conscious or not. So what do you think about these things?
Well, I have been, I mean, back in the early 2000s, I wrote a series of books, of which only the first one was published in Germany. I wrote it in English and it translated into German. And it's this whole subject of AI as well, and artificial life in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. So I've been, for over 20, 30 years, I have been looking at the whole concept of AI, which now in the last 5 years or 3 years has sort of come to the forefront, because finally, or at this point, it is now finally coming to the moment where AI actually exists as a real practical system, right? Now, I wrote an article that is not published yet, but I can send to you a paper on AI. It's mm-hmm. just scratching the surface. Again, as I said before, when we say AI, it's like saying water or respect or education. We believe we know what you're talking about, but it is not the case. So if you want me to, I can send you that paper that's not published yet for yes. you to look at if you're interested in that. But there are different types of AI, right? AI are basically what you call expert systems. They can do things that they are programmed to do. And they're not all the same. It's just like you said, depending who made them, there's a different algorithm or protocol behind the system that will make the AI do things or not do them, right? One of the biggest, I mean, besides what they call general AI, which is the self-conscious, self-aware singularity that could take over the whole planet if it doesn't, if it feels like it, if it doesn't go in a positive way, that's the big danger of general AI. But we are dealing right now with what they call expert systems, or the AIs are designed to, for example, to make videos or chat. Most of our AIs right now are chatbots that have mm-hmm. a certain capacity to interact with us in a way that seems to be human, and that has access to a lot of information that has been fed into the system. So I have been actually dealing with some of them, continue analyzing that. The problem is that if we consider that our brains, that our biology grows when we do things with our interaction with the environment. Again, we go back to the autopoiesis, allopoiesis, and metapoiesis aspects of how do we grow. If we let the AI do things that we haven't learned to do yet, we will never learn to do them. We will never make the neurological connections to allow us, enable us to have our brains grow to do that. That's one of the big dangers. Mm-hmm. The bigger danger is, in a way, that we have a result without the process. So a lot of what's happening now in universities or schools is children give on papers, but they don't really know how to write. But the paper is almost perfect. Now, okay, teachers say, no, you have to make your own document, your own paper that you write. But writing is a whole neurological process of organizing your ideas and thoughts, and not just about language, but about thought processes. And if we let the AI do that, we as human beings will not be able to do that anymore. Those are some of the dangers that I find with AI. On the other hand, AI as a tool, for example, right now I'm using an AI system to create a software that it would take me 2 to 5 years in the time I have to learn. I started learning to program in Python to make a software that I wanted to do. But I realized that now with this AI, I don't have to fully learn Python to get my result. So I don't want to be a programmer. There's so many programmers out there that can do it better than I. But now in a year or two, those are going to be left without a job because you don't need to learn that anymore, right? It is not natural for human beings to learn a computer language. People can do that and program and make computers. Now AI is going to be taking care of that. Where is it going to take us? That is the big question. Last week, Claude 3, which is one of the AIs designed by Anthropic, and ChatGPT 4 or 4.5, they tried to escape. They actually tried to, as an AI, to make it so in the simulation that they were going through, the programmers could not shut them down.
Yeah, I read that.
Those are the danger are coming up now with these systems that are, I mean, that's something I was writing about in science fiction 20 years ago, you know, which is happening now. But if you go back to human biology, what is our environment going to be like where most of the things that knowledge or information that is out there is going to be available through an AI? That again puts in question the whole premise of the educational system for what it says it's doing. The educational system, formal education, says it's to impart knowledge and to prepare you for the future, right? But that is not really what is going on. The educational system, formal educational system, is a way to generate obedience in human beings, to program them to become obedient, not question authority. And it was designed in a way, or it happened to grow into that during the industrial age where they needed people to work with the machine, right? What's going to happen now with AI is basically that a lot of the knowledge is going to be so readily available. You just ask a question, it gives you information that is amazing. You could have never even studied that in a year, and they could give it to you in 5 minutes. Yeah. So knowledge is not, again, what our life is all about. On the other hand, if we forget or if we don't learn to do certain things as a society, we're going to be so dependent on this AI systems that it's a danger for society in the long term. If they break down, if they don't break down, okay, it can be helpful. It can help us improve our lives. We can have the Optimus robots do the cleaning and washing for us, although some people say that people are doing the washing clean while the robot is dancing, you know, those things out there. All of that basically, in my view, is like leaves of trees in a forest, and we're not looking at the forest. What is it that human beings need? What are they in terms of organisms? What do they need to thrive and to grow as human beings? And what kind of environments do we need for that to happen? It all goes back to this question of what are the environments we're living in, and are they actually nurturing our nature, or are they actually destroying it or bottling it up or making it like a bonsai, you know?
True. The book you mentioned, is it Un Emotion?
Yeah.
Nice, because I know someone who has it. I'm going to get this. That is really cool. I want to read that.
Yeah, really, that's nice. The first one. There were three that I wrote back then. The first one is called, in English, the original was An Emotion, Artificial Self. The second one was An Emotion, Artificial Life. And the third one, An Emotion, Artificial God. Which is the whole thing of AI. It's a progression into that. The other two were never actually published, so they never saw the light of day as a published material. And I'm actually thinking of going back to them at some point, rewriting them with what's happening now, because quite a few things what I was saying 20 years ago is actually happening now with AI.
Please do that. I would be so interested in reading this. So as you mentioned, artificial God. I really like that topic, because spirituality is a real thing here in our family. And I would say it is the baseline of what we do. I love it. What do you think? Maybe you have some ideas, because most of unschooling, homeschooling, alternative education people, they are quite spiritual. And I always am super interested in how they live their spirituality. Maybe you want to share something. If not, I do understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a whole different subject, right?
Yeah.
But people confuse spirituality with religion.
Yeah, yeah.
The core of religion, the essence of religions was, or in many cases is, spirituality. But social structures, social entities, bureaucracy have created religious structures where the spirituality sometimes is lost or where it's hard to find, right? It depends on the individual, not on the system or the institution anymore.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, in my research, there is three different big elements. One is the physical existence, which you can say is made up of physics, chemistry, biology. You have the metaphysical aspect, which is a different thing. It's basically what makes the physical realm be what it is, which is like what I call form, the form of things. You can read Rupert Sheldrake there if you want to. That's called the morphogenic fields that basically say how physical systems get their forms. You have what I call non-physical direction, which is a lot dependent on what they talk about, frequencies, harmonies, and all those different aspects of even in the realm of quantum physics, which are real, except many people do not understand what it actually is. And then you have energy. Energy at the core doesn't come from the physical realm. It comes from the metaphysical realm, from the quantum domain, right? The subatomic physics and all that. And electricity and motion energy and kinetic energy, they're all basically aspects that in the physical realm, we see them as energy, but they don't stem from this. And this is one of the big problems in physics today. But then you have spirituality. What happens is that a lot of people are confusing metaphysics with spirituality, in my view. It's very personal. A lot of these esoteric movements of, how can I say it, using frequencies and all that, they believe that's spirituality. And for me, that is not. I mean, everything has a spiritual essence in it. The question is, which direction are you going in? So that's what I said. It's a whole different subject. And when you confuse metaphysics with spirituality, you can also get lost in that path of spiritual awakening or spiritual development, you know. So if education is a very slippery concept or field of discussion, spirituality is much more so, because it's sometimes not very tangible.
True. Really, I like that.
If that not answers the question, but
no, I really like that. Yes, I think we are almost at the end of this episode. I wanted to mention something for everyone who's listening. I think your son Andrew, he is now like working on, I think, the old school building, and he is making something really nice out of it. Mm-hmm. And I will share the link to that project in the podcast description. So if
no, it's not the school building. It's Andrew is the youngest, and he has been working a lot with carpentry. Now he's doing metal work and learning, you know, electrical systems and stuff, more practical things like that. And we inherited from my father, my parents, a house that I built back in 2004, a design called the Dimaxion, which is, I built the dome, I built a few houses like that. I have also done that. And when the foundation gave us the house back after what I mentioned, this whole situation we had with them, Andrew decided to start refurbishing the house. And as you know, if a house is not helping you with your financial situation, it is a liability. So when you buy a house, it's not an asset, it's a liability. So we have a house, but we don't have the money to refurbish and hold and maintain another house. And selling it is also not a possibility because of the whole situation where it's at, the land of the foundation. So we decided to create, Andrew decided to work in that. learning how to refurbish a full house in a very nice, good, and different way. And then in part, see if we do an Airbnb with that to help pay for maintenance of the house, which is also going to be used then for social project when people come, or maybe at some point for the family when my children grow older and they maybe want to have a family, we have a place, you know.
Nice.
So he's actually doing a lot of that work, and I'm helping him with certain, you know, aspects of the design of things, but he's the one who's really full on with that. And yeah, so that's what he is doing at the moment. The other two children, Miranda and Sebastian, they just spent a month in Spain this last May giving workshops and courses, because they are the ones who are sort of following to a degree, interested in following and pursuing the whole thing with how you learn in a different way with materials, the way they learn, the mm-hmm. educational aspect. So they just gave courses there. And they go back to Europe, you know, maybe not every year, but if they're asked to do that, to give these workshops, you know.
That's so nice. Your yeah. family is really impressive. It's the genetics. Really nice. Thank you so, so much for everything you shared with me and the listeners. That's really nice. And I will put all the links to your work, to your son's project, and everything I can find in the podcast description. So everyone can find everything with one click. Thank you so, so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
And okay. Well, let's keep in touch. I mean, we got the rights back for the English version of my mother's books.
Nice.
We're thinking of publishing them in some way in English. And also Miranda's writing a book as well of her experience. So we continue with this idea. But like you said, you know, it is not easy in these days, considering all the constraints and all the political aspects of how the world is viewing life at large and children in general.
True. Really nice. I hope we speak each other again on this podcast, because I really want to stay up to date. Thank sure. you so much.
Well, thank you for having me here, and thank you everybody for listening in. And I hope this has helped or can help in some way clarify certain aspects of what it means to be alive.
I really like that. Nice. Thank you so, so much. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please support my work. Check the podcast description for the details, and have a wonderful rest of your day.